I'd like to first do some introduction, a little bit of myself and the topic, and get you folks involved a little bit. Then I'll get into some definitions that I'll take probably a good portion of the time on definitions. And then some thoughts about how those definitions on sex and sexuality relate to theology or relate to being a Christian person. And then finally, taking some of your questions and maybe some comments and thoughts from you folks. But first off, let me give you a little background on myself. I've had several people come up to me and say, "Have you done this before? Or where do you come off trying to do this?" Not really that way, but I guess my first reaction is, well, I'm human, and I'm a sexual person, so I'm naturally interested in the area of sexuality. About 3 years ago, I had the opportunity to participate in a program sponsored by the American Lutheran Church and the University of Minnesota, which was called Towards Professional Competence in Sex-Related Concerns, a Week of Enrichment, which is a long title for a program at the University of Minnesota called Sexual Attitudes Reassessment. And this was related to the church. This program was originally started for medical students at the University of Minnesota, and then the ALC hooked into it and has been doing some things with it for almost 10 years now. That was a very intensive study, and it was a time when people came from all over the country to get some good, clear-cut answers to their black and white questions, and they found a lot of grayness, and they left that week, that seminar, with gray answers to their black and white questions. I also had the chance this last fall to participate in a probe sponsored by the ALC on singles and sexuality in the church, at which we were charged with coming up with some suggestions for the church and how the church can better serve singles and in the area of sexuality. And it was a kind of a bleak results from that weekend. The results were that the church doesn't deal very well with sexuality for the married folks, and it seems like that's the place they're going to start. And so it didn't seem very hopeful after that weekend, although it was a very productive and enriching weekend for all of us who attended. And then I have also helped with some teaching in the last 5 years with some sexuality courses at St. Olaf College and at Augsburg College, and in some church group kinds of things. I have not gone to seminary. I don't consider myself a theologian, although I guess many times I do theology. I live theology, I hope. I am not married. But I am a human person, a sexual person, and that's where I come from, and that's where my background is. I have been influenced by a couple of sources that basically I'll be using today, and I'll tell you more about those later. But first off, now I would like to get you involved a little bit. This is an uncomfortable topic for everybody. And as much as I've dealt with it and talked with it and taught about it, it still is kind of a nerve-wracking thing when you get out in front of people and start talking about sexuality. So I'll let you be nervous, too. I would like you to take one of these pieces of paper that on the back is a letter from Marilyn. But you can read the letter from Marilyn if you want, but that's not what the sheet of paper is for. And I'd like you to, I hope y'all have a pencil. Y'all have a pencil?
No.
No pencil.
Pen.
Anybody have an extra pencil?
Yeah, yeah.
Pen's okay. Still. Anybody else need a writing utensil? Okay. You can, however big you want, probably even the whole sheet of paper, divide that into a tic-tac-toe board. Like this. The whole sheet of paper. You can see mine here. Extra scratch paper. Okay, got your tic-tac-toe board?
Tic-tac-toe squares, is that important?
3 by 3. Tic-tac-toe, huh? When did you last play tic-tac-toe? Okay. Got that part? That was the hard part. For up in the upper left-hand box, I have up here on the board just a little bit of a thing, so it's not the whole thing that I'm going to ask you to do. It's just a thought so that you can remember what it's about. First corner is about your congregation. If you are a member of a congregation or have been, that dredge back into your mind about your congregation. And I want you to indicate on there whether your experience in your congregation has had a sex positive, neutral, or negative influence in your life. Just put a negative, a zero, or a plus. Sex is related to sex.
We're going to do this before the definition of...
Right, before you know what it is. I'll just pretend you don't know. You want a piece of paper so you can do this too? Okay. Divide your sheet up into a tic-tac-toe board. As I experienced, my congregation has had a sex positive, neutral, negative influence in my life. Okay, the middle one on the top, name three chief resources of information about sexuality in your life. Three chief resources. Whatever, first three things that come to your mind. If you can't think of three, write two or one. Three chief resources of information about sexuality in your life. First three that you think of. In the top middle. That isn't going to be real helpful. It's just a reminder if you, you know, if I get ahead of you. So listen to me rather than look at that. Okay, the upper right-hand corner, this is related to society. As I experience it, society has had a sex positive, neutral, or negative influence in my life. Society, positive, neutral, or negative influence. You determine what society means. Middle row on the far left. The three most important events, persons, books, movies, etc., that have had the most sex positive influence in your life. Three most important sex positive influences in your life. That could be events, people, movies, books.
So it's slightly different than the one on the top that was...
Right. This is sex positive. The other, it was chief resources of information.
Events or people or books.
Or books or movies or places.
Positive. It's tough.
As, up to three. Maybe you only have one. Whoa. Jeez. For the second row, middle row, far left, the three most important sex positive influences in my life. Sex positive. People, books, movies. In the middle, this is about yourself. I believe my attitudes towards sexuality in my life at this time are positive, neutral, or negative. I believe my attitudes towards sexuality in my life at this time are positive, neutral, or negative. Is Okay, in the far right, in the middle, the three most important sex negative influences in my life. Events, persons, books, movies. Sex negative influences. Up to three. Okay, I'm going to move fast now. Denomination, down in the far left corner. As I experience, my denomination has had a sex positive, neutral, negative influence in my life. Denomination, has that been a positive, negative, or neutral experience in your life? In the middle on the bottom, how well informed are you about sexuality between 1 and 5? 1, poorly informed, 5, highly informed. Don't worry, this is just for you. You don't have to turn it in. Yes.
Does this count?
This one counts. After you're done with this today, you'll have a 5. No.
It's my time.
Okay, in the last box, your current family or your the primary support group you have right now, has that experience been a positive, neutral, or negative influence in your life?
Sexually
related. As I experience, my current family or primary support group has had a sex positive, neutral, or negative influence in my life. Okay. That's for you. You don't have to share it unless you want to. You're going to burn it? Don't let anybody see it. All the squares. I want you to just keep it, and you can refer back to it while I'm talking. Right now, I want you to get to, you have a person on each side of you, I would assume, somewhere. I want you to get in groups of three right now. Make a group of three.
Start
okay. No. You keep them honest. Okay, I'm going to give you each 1 minute in your group, so you have 3 minutes, to share with one another how you first learned about sex.
Can we go outside behind them?
That's how you did it. Huh? Okay, 3 minutes. I think everybody has at least one hilarious story about how they learned about sex, and I'd like you to share some of those. I'll tell you one of mine. I grew up on a farm, as many of you know, and so everybody always knows that farm kids know everything about sex, right? Forget it. I was probably 23 or 24 when I first saw the breeder breed a cow, and because my father would never let me stay in the barn when the breeder came. If the breeder came, I instinctively knew it was my time to go to the house. So I... Finally, one time I was out in the barn, I was about 23 or 24, and I thought, I'm going to watch this. And I did, and I thought, oh, yuck, that's no big deal. But what was the other one I was going to show you? Oh, yeah. I learned most of what I know about sex in the band room practice room. Seventh and eighth grade, we used to get passes to go to the band room practice room and tell dirty jokes to each other. Everybody thought we were practicing, but I suppose we were, in a way. So. Anybody else's stories about how they first learned about sex?
In late elementary school, I can't remember when, my parents, I came home from some evening activity. I think I'd been home all day. They gave me a book called Boys and Sex or some such. Said, they didn't give me very much information. Sort of, we want you to read this and this will make you informed. And so I went off upstairs and I read pretty quick at that point. I came back in an hour and a half, 2 hours, and gave it back to them and said, well, I've read it. They said, do you have any questions? Sort of, I hope you don't, but do you? I said, no. And my mother was like, it took me a week to read that.
Where'd you get your information? Anybody else? Well, if you don't like yours, tell somebody else from your groups.
Did many people have sex education classes in school? I didn't.
No, I did. Just like the fifth grade or whatever, when the boys go watch one movie and the girls go watch another.
What, the VD movie or a sex education movie? I saw a VD movie.
We had some education. It was a combination.
We had it junior high,
high school. I'm just kidding. I was shocked when we had to go to the film called The Story of Menstruation by Walt Disney, of all people.
Walt Disney.
I was just shocked that Walt Disney did this.
Donald Duck.
No, Daisy Duck or whatever. Did you want to say something? Melinda? Oh, I thought you had your hand up. Anybody else? Oh, you're shy. Well, that's okay. Going to the sheet that you did with the tic-tac-toe, any comments about that or any of the relationships you see on that sheet? Kristen?
I found something that was that my personal experience with people, my parents and my friends and my boyfriends and everyone I knew on a personal level, all were pluses. And institutional things like church and society, congregation, and whatever the last one on the
denomination.
Yeah, we're zero to negative, mostly negative.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah. Other comments?
I found my children to be very helpful to me. Harvey Jr. especially, because you all know him, like, so I should tell you that. And our daughter who's in college now has been a great source of information for me, because as I'm a teacher, the kids say a lot of things I didn't even know what they meant, you know, from my background. So I would always come home and say to my children, what does this mean? Is this dirty? And I got a lot of information that way. And now that she's away from home and none of the kids are home, now I'm forced to say to the kids when they say those things to me, what do you expect from me? Is this a dirty comment or not?
How do they react?
They tell me if it is.
You're being pretty open to them, it seems like. Not letting that be a barrier.
Yeah.
Other comments you saw from this exercise?
Something just occurred to me, it has nothing to do with it. A quick aside, your remark about individuals as opposed to... I've never done this kind of thing before, but it just struck me it might be useful sometimes to do this on different things, not just sex, but all kinds of things, and see where your pluses and your minuses and your negatives come out. I would guess that an awful lot of things, institutions would receive the zeros or the minuses on a lot of areas, not just in sex. I may be wrong, I'm no sociologist. That's a guess.
When I've done this before, I have found that I consider myself to be, my own personal attitude towards sexuality to be positive, and that I'm fairly well informed. I consider myself highly informed, in fact, but all the other things around it are negative. That the institutions are negative, my family experience and training has been negative. So that makes me question, well, where do I get my positive attitude then? Well, that's just a kind of a starter to get some thinking going for us. And maybe you'll want to refer back to that later. I keep these kinds of things for myself and see how it changes, because that's a dynamic kind of thing. It's always changing for us. And it's kind of fun to date them and keep them, maybe in your journal, and see in 10 weeks or like 2 years or whenever, maybe how you change. Or maybe not change. Who knows? Now I would like to do some definitions for you, and I probably will spend a good portion of the time on definitions, and I hope that I'm not insulting anyone. Maybe some of you already know these definitions fairly well, maybe better than I do. And if you have questions or comments or need clarifications or want to help clarify, please chime in. I welcome your thoughts, your comments, whatever. But first of all, I'd like to clearly define sexuality as in the way that I'm going to use it today, in a way, and it's not mine, my definition. It's a definition that's been used probably for, near 40 years now. There's been a trend to using this definition for the term sexuality. And that is that sexuality means all that we are. Specifically, all that I am as a female person, and or if you're male, all that you are as a male person. Your experience, having been brought up in our society, in your church, in your family, in your denomination, in your community, to become the male person that you are or the female person that you are. And aside to that is that I think that each one of us has male parts of us and female parts of us. That at any one time, my experience is on a continuum between male and female, and that no one is totally a pure male and a pure female, but that I have parts of me that are masculine and I have parts of me that are feminine as well. Dave has feminine and masculine parts too. But sexuality then, the term means, is a very comprehensive term. It is a very broad term, and it means all that you are, all that your experience is, and how you look at things as a male person or a female person.
Jen, mm-hmm. Do you want to so freely equate sex terms with gender terms? You talked about you use male and female and masculine and feminine about as equivalents. Okay. And some people are more.
Okay, say some more. I'm not sure what you're getting at.
It would seem to me that I am a sexually male person. I'm gifted with male parts. But that I can gain female gender behaviors or ways of being, but I'm not likely, without some fairly massive surgery, to gain female genitals.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, that comes into what I call the sex part of it, not sexuality.
The distinction I'm trying to draw is between gender and sex.
Mm-hmm. Okay, you're just using different terms than I do. Let's see.
Maybe he's talking about the difference between male and masculine.
Okay. I use male and female many times to mean masculine, feminine. Part of sexuality is sex. And sex is genital, and that is what makes the genital part is what makes your body a male body or a female body. Is that clearer for folks? And that was just my next point, that genital sex is only a small part of sexuality. It's an important part, but it's only a part of it. Sexuality infiltrates into all of what we do and all of what we understand, so that it affects how we think, what we say, what we do, how we react, how we hear things. It affects all relationships. It affects a relationship with any other person. I have a sexual relationship with every person in this room. I wouldn't say that everywhere. But since I've given you the definition, I think you understand what I mean. I mean by saying that I have a sexual relationship with every person in this room is that I, being a female person, a feminine person, relate to you coming from that experience, or from that background, or from my understanding of being female. And I relate to you as being male or female, whichever you are. So that I have a sexual relationship with everyone. Parents have sexual relationships with their children. Children have sexual relationships with their parents. Male, females, female, females, male, males, whoever. And after a while, you know, if you start thinking about this too much, it gets kind of, it's like, oh, weird, what's going on, what's happening? But if you can just let it be, and that, I don't think about that all the time, you know, go up to somebody and say, I have a sexual relationship with this person. Christy.
Thinking that way, realizing that each of us have a male and female part, maybe a lot of our troubles in our society have been caused by people, by females looking at males as males and not having any female part, and vice versa.
Not
understanding that each person, to some degree, has more or less of the opposite sexuality.
Kind of stereotyping. Mm-hmm. Getting an image of what male masculinity means, and then putting a person who looks male into that mold.
Yeah. And not opening your eyes to seeing that person's female parts, feminine parts.
Yeah, I would agree with you. It's the same. It goes back to the idea of first impressions. You know, you shouldn't always go on first impressions and stereotyping. Yeah.
And also, not only do we do that, but we put values on certain parts of us. I mean, in our culture, masculine traits are more valuable.
In certain cases.
Yeah.
Yeah. Certain situations. Such in the church, I would say that feminine traits maybe have more value.
In some
situations.
Yeah.
Like if you were going to a pastor for pastoral counseling, you would value the nurturant gentleness. I would value that.
But if you look at the structure, hierarchical structure of the church, you'll see that masculine traits are predominant.
Interesting, eh? Just goes to say that we need all of them.
Yeah.
Okay. I want to make one point that sexuality is not the only thing in life. That there, some people, once I get off on this soapbox, start, you know, putting me, saying, well, that, you think that's the only thing there is in life, you know, and that's the most important thing. Well, it's not the only thing in life. There are many other parts of our personality that make us who we are. But sexuality is one of those things that infiltrates everything. It's a common thread in it all. Today, even though you folks didn't come up with much, there are lots of ways to find out about sex. I guess I would agree with those who contend that if you don't know the physiological, the biological end of sex, it's because you choose not to, in most cases. There's lots of good information available. There's not a whole bunch of good information about sexuality, as I have defined it here. And I want to tell you of a couple things that are available to us, and if you want to do more, some of you are interested in a book study, and that'll be one of the resources. And one of those resources is Embodiment by James Nelson. James Nelson is an ethicist, teaches at United Seminary in New Brighton, Minnesota.
What?
He teaches ethics and
ethics.
It is not the end all in resources, but it is probably one of the best. It's a 78 copyright. Then the other one is Elmer Witt's tapes, who is Tom's dad, that are in our library here. There are a couple of really good tapes that I just discovered yesterday that he has done, and I would encourage you to read. One is a 78 tape on perspectives on Christianity and human sexuality, and the other is an 80 tape on Life Can Be Sexual, which is the name of a book he wrote in the 60s. But those are pretty good tapes, and both of them have a lot of the same information, so if you're going to choose one, I guess I would suggest probably the 78 tape. I think it's a little more comprehensive, but good overview of the thing, and some of the things I'm going to say today come directly from that. Then there's also a book in the library called Sexual Intimacy, which I have not read thoroughly. I've just skimmed it a little bit. And Mary Schramm referred it to me, and it seems to be pretty good. It's 66, I think. No, 73. Oh, no. Elmer Witt's book is 66. By Andrew Greeley. And I have lists and lists and lists and lists of resources if you're interested in looking at some specific topics, too. Let's see here. Both Witt and Nelson referred to Carl Jung, a psychologist, when he said that in his relationship, counseling relationships with individuals, he said that when people bring a religious problem to him, most times it had a sexual dimension. And vice versa, when people brought a sexual problem to him, it had a religious dimension to it. And therefore, he was making the statement that inevitably a sexual problem or a sexual issue has a religious dimension to it. And that just goes to say that what we as Christian people believe about sin, salvation, grace, creation, God's purpose for us as sexual beings, love, justice, community, what we believe about those things has a Christian element and a sexual element to it. And that the two are so complexly intertwined that we cannot separate them, that we must deal with both if we're dealing with one. So how we experience ourselves as sexual people will condition how we react in the content or and the style of how we react as Christians. Similarly, how we react as Christians will affect our content, our style of being sexual beings. Let me give an example that Nelson gives in his book, and that is if we believe that males are superior than females. If we believe that, then as Christians, that's a sexual thing. If we believe that, as Christians, we would put men at the head of our churches, we would all listen to male preachers, we would make God very male and give him masculine traits, and everything would be with male superiority. Conversely, if we believe that God was only male, we would probably give males superiority in our personal one-to-one sexual contacts. Does that make sense? I mean, pretty simple, I think. Let me be a little more brief about some definitions. Sex is biologically based. It is for procreation, pleasure, tension release, and it's largely genital, and that is sex. Sexuality, on the other hand, is more comprehensive, it's broader, more symbolic. Nelson goes fairly extensively into the symbolism of sexuality, and he, you know, it's kind of a neat little progression of symbolism. Sexuality is psychological, and it's cultural. It's related to our social conditioning. In general, it is the basic dimension of who we are as persons, our sexuality. Let me see here. I want to make the point also that sexuality expresses God's intention that we be human people in relationships to other people. So that God's relationship in there is that we be in community with people, in relationship with people, and that we are male or female in that relationship. I want to also stick in one other little definition here And that's theology. I always have a difficult time with that word because I have not formally studied theology. I feel intimidated by that word. A lot of people tell me not to feel intimidated by it, but I usually do. And when I say I'm no theologian, people always say, "Well, you just do your theology. You don't know what you're doing, but you do it," kind of thing. But I try to keep a handle on the fact that theology is a study of God, and it's the relationship of God to my world. So those are the three basic definitions for what I'm talking about today. Sex, sexuality, theology. And I think they're pretty basic. Are there questions about any of that, Tom?
Are you going to go on and define feminine and masculine? Because when you say that each male and female has feminine and masculine characteristics, you are assuming that there are definitions of those. Mm-hmm.
I wasn't planning on it, but we can do that. Did you want to say something?
No.
Okay. I guess I would ask for help on that then. What I think that's pretty individual too, and I think we need to come to a consensus maybe about what feminine and masculine would be.
Feminine and masculine, would they be characteristics that a society has labeled feminine and masculine?
I would say that my definition of feminine and masculine come from my environment, the people around me, my society, my church, my family.
I'm just wondering if there are masculine characteristics and feminine characteristics that we all have.
Mm-hmm.
But are those constant characteristics? I mean, are they people in Japan have the same kind of masculine and feminine characteristics, or even in a different part of this country?
My thinking is that it is culturally determined, that it would be different in different cultures. And I haven't done enough study to say that in Japan it's this, and in Kenya it's this. But I do know that different communities that aren't even very far apart have differences in my experience. I can throw out some words that are synonymous for me with masculine and feminine. And why don't you throw out some as I'm throwing them out too? Feminine to me would connote nurturance, gentleness, emotion. Let's have some more.
Linguistic or verbal?
Verbal.
Sensitive.
Caring.
Disorder.
Disorder.
Well, we were talking yesterday about tech studies about this God being orderly and disorderly. I think orderly is the masculine. I thought it was a masculine trait and feminine and disorderly. Mm-hmm.
Creative.
Circular.
Circular.
Mm-hmm. What do you mean by circular?
Rather than linear. Well, not necessarily going from one point to the next point, but coming around. I don't know.
Yeah, say some more.
No, they prefer.
I just think that I've been in discussions where, you know, if I'm the only man and there's where I worked last year as a Vista volunteer in public housing in Minneapolis and worked practically with all single black women with kids. And I just really had to learn when I was surrounded by so many women that the conversations went differently than they did in meetings where you had an agenda and you went to this point, to this point, and this point. And we'd talk about an issue in the community and then there might be 15 minutes of really peripheral discussion about anything, and it would eventually come back around to what you're talking about again. And it was a new experience for me, but mm-hmm. and I, in talking to people about it, I don't think that that's strange. But that
I understand. Go ahead.
There's a person who's written a book about female thinking as opposed to male thinking, and they talk about
males talking with an idea in mind at the end of a point, and females just sort of sharing, talking. I guess that kind of relates to what you're talking about.
Yeah, thanks.
Not necessarily always trying to come to a conclusion.
Matthew Fox in the Compassion book, which is a theme book this summer, talks a little bit about circular as opposed to linear thinking.
That, to me, relates to women being more process-oriented and men more content-oriented. I've been in, I was on a steering committee for a group of women that were starting a group in the Twin Cities. And it was really a thrill to be a part of that group because I experienced both. We had in the beginning, we spent time setting up our goals for the meeting and basically setting up an agenda without writing it down, saying, we want to do this tonight. We spent a lot of time during that session caring about one another, making sure that each person's viewpoint was voiced, that everyone heard it, that, and I would hear somebody saying, Sue, did you understand what Carol was saying? So that there was the caring about the relationship that was going on. Yeah.
It seems to me that feminine, masculine, and sexuality all are really a matter of opinion in a particular society. And it's something that almost everything feminine and masculine could be, there can be examples shown of it being masculine in one area and feminine in another. Margaret Mead did some interesting studies in primitive peoples in New Guinea, I believe it was. And within a very small distance of each other, there were tribes that had completely different traits on what was feminine and masculine.
But we're not connecting these to a male person or a female person, are we? We're just
not right now.
Just labeling these characteristics as masculine and feminine.
For our culture.
Within our culture.
As we understand it.
But we could keep those definitions and apply them to another culture, but they might be completely switched as to how, you know, maybe the males will have all the feminine characteristics that we call feminine.
Mm-hmm.
When Jung was talking about dream symbolism, the anima and animus, he says that men have a woman they dream about that is called the anima, I think, which is female.
That's female.
And women have the same part in their dream, but it's male. So I'm not quite sure how that relates, but I think it does somehow.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we're talking about the other aspect of ourselves that's not so apparent.
Yeah. Why don't we throw out some masculine things we've kind of alluded to? You know, it seems like a dichotomy, and I don't necessarily know that it is, but what are some masculine traits?
Aggressivity.
What's that?
Aggression.
Aggression? What did you say?
Aggressivity.
Oh.
Intellectual.
Yeah. I think
problem solvers.
Logical is a term I use.
Logical.
Rational.
Active.
Strong.
Practical.
Linear. I think that linear circular stuff is so great because we think of men's bodies as being linear and women's bodies being circular, and I think it's a nice little symbolism. Harsh.
Opinionated. We're just being appropriate if I'm scared of this. There's a parlor game you can do with friends.
No, it's not appropriate. No.
You try to make a drawing of the table of where you ate as a child growing up, and you place everyone around the table. And then you assign a color to each of the person. I don't think there's any psychological implications, but
well, there could be.
I was in a class on marriage relationships where a professor did this, and then we shared what colors we were. And it was interesting that almost all the fathers were either black or red.
Mm-hmm. Vibrant colors.
Dominant and colors. Decisive and disciplinary.
Interesting. Okay. That kind of gives us
that kind of gives us a sense of what I'm talking about, what we as a group are talking about when we use the terms masculine and feminine. Okay. Let me give you some thoughts about being Christian and a sexual person. Here again, I'm going to give my disclaimer. I'm not a theologian, but I have some ideas. I use the word God a lot once in a while, and so that kind of gets me into the theological realm. I grew up in a United Methodist family, and my family are very active in that church. But it wasn't until I started hanging around with the Lutherans about 5 years ago that I started hearing this word grace all the time. And I didn't understand what that meant. I didn't know what that meant. I remembered hearing it a lot as a youngster in hymns and in sermons and in prayers and stuff, but we never really talked about it, what it meant much. And the Lutherans talked about it a lot more, and I kind of got a sense of what it meant. Had some experiences where I realized that it was a giftedness, the gift that is given to us only by God. And sexuality is a gift. We are given our maleness, our femaleness, and our masculinity and our femininity. It's not an accident. It's a gift from God. And I think if we look at our sexuality in that way, we need to, if we look at that, we will treat it as a gift and use it with treasuring it as a gift from God. Also, the second thing that I think is a good thing to think about when we're thinking about sexuality is redemption, that our sexuality is redeemed of God. That I think we think about our soul being redeemed a lot, but our body is also a part of our wholeness, and that our body and soul are redeemed of God, that we are forgiven people, and sexually forgiven people. I had an aha experience yesterday as I was reading, that's related to this, that the redemption and our thinking about ourselves, see if I can give you the aha, I don't know if I can, is directly related to thinking about why Christ died. We need to value ourselves and our sexuality, our understanding of ourselves, because Christ died for us, and God sent Christ to die for us. And because we are valuable sexual beings. I'm worth it. I'm worth it. My sexual being, my sexualness is worth it so much that God let his son die for it. Another important element of sexuality that's related to God is the whole idea of community. God's intention was that we be a group of people who come together and live in community, live together, relate to other people as sexual people, relate to other people sexually. Now, I think it's beginning to sound like I'm not including the sex end of sexuality, and I am. And remember that in the definition, sex is a part of sexuality. But that a sex relationship with someone and a sexual relationship is a gift from God, is redeemed of God, is a part of the community that we are intended to have. Here in this idea of community comes the idea of love, of God's love, being an agent of God's love, receiving the bread and the wine so that God's love is within us, and that we can also give, the agents of that love, to give that love. And in everything there is, it's in relationships with other people, and that we need to be loving individuals, loving people, in that. It is also God accepts us as who we are, and that also frees us up to accept who we are and to accept others who they are. Elmer Witt talks about spontaneity in his tape, and I think, and he says that Christianity affirms spontaneity, that we need to be spontaneous in our sexuality. And in fact, he says, and I think it's neat, I like the idea, that we aren't spontaneous enough. That it seems like the church, we know a lot about the problems of sexuality, the negative side of sexuality, which is usually related to the genital part of sexuality. Someone gets pregnant, someone has an abortion, someone decides or comes out as homosexual. And that usually, the problems that we think are problems that are related to sexuality are genital. And that's only a part of it again. We are lots of times not sexual enough, that we don't allow ourselves to be sexual, that, and that we limit ourselves by thinking that sexuality is only sex related, it's only a genital act, or it's only related to large breasts or macho bodies or whatever. That we limit ourselves, that a sexual relationship can be a touch. I think we're pretty good about that around here. Yeah, did you want to?
Well, on the other hand, what you're saying, though, Freud, of course, based there all these activities that we do on our relationship to sex. I have the feeling sometimes, and quite often, I've felt this way for a long time, that we try to overemphasize sex. Like we may call sexuality something that are social interactions of some kind. It doesn't necessarily have to be called sexual interaction. I think that's a matter, can be a matter of opinion or semantics or something, or your interpretation, the person's interpretation of it. Sometimes it seems to me that in any particular area of study, the people involved in that area have a tendency to expand it. Like maybe everything's water, you know, so we can really study water.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
you know,
so
you were talking about specialization the other day and how everything
right.
is so specialized in culture.
Right.
Maybe we do need to expand things so that they overlap and see how that interaction is.
I think one thing Janet's saying is that we tie the word sex so much to genital things, and then she's trying to say that really sexuality, we're talking maybe semantics, but is a much more far-reaching thing, and talks about her whole person, and it's not just a few certain physical characteristics.
Well, I guess I'm not sure what your comment was that you're...
Well, I'm not a big fan of Freud. Actually, and it is semantical, whatever emphasis you want to put on a particular word or idea, how you want to expand it. It seems to me that femininity and masculinity have been overemphasized, and also sexuality has been. There's a large area of number of people involved in this study, and it. It is something that I think has been expanded more than I like to see expanded.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure what the benefits necessarily are. You can say a lot of these interactions that we have, you could call it a different term. We definitely do have some of these interactions, and people have a tendency to act certain ways. But whether or not this is all sexuality is what I question.
I think the definition of sexuality that Janet is offering is rises out of a sense that we experience other people to be members of one sex or the other sex, and that either massively or very minimally informs the way that we relate to them. And it's not necessarily that we're thinking about the sort of genitals that they have or imagining some sort of sex body-to-body relationship with
them.
Well,
right, I wasn't speaking that.
I think I understand where you're coming from, though basically, my understanding of sexuality is that probably we haven't explored, we haven't crossed the roads a lot. We haven't worked at men learning nurturing. I think that's something that's very important. I think that's something that has been very neglected by the church and severely neglected in our society. All you see on TV and advertising and movies is stereotyping. I think we do have to cross the boundaries to be complete people.
Of course, it's something that Jesus was emphasizing very much, is nurturing, and a lot of people would say, well, when the apostles were trying to see who should be first, he mentioned serving, of course. That person would be first. And we would say that that would be a feminine characteristic, possibly. But I question whether we should say that.
Why would you question that?
Well, here again, I think we're expanding. I can see how you can apply sexuality to everything. Like I say, my example is water is really in everything. You know, we can really emphasize and concentrate on our study of water.
And that might be very helpful to our understanding of how we live in the world. And we're very dependent on water. It might be very helpful to emphasize water and everything. It might also be very helpful to emphasize our sexuality, since our water affects everything we do.
Sometimes,
sexuality also affects everything we do. So.
Sometimes I feel in our society today, though, that we're trying to make feminine and masculine one. And I think it's to our detriment.
I think what's needed, maybe that's what's happening, but I think what's needed is we need to separate the two within ourselves.
Well, become more fluid.
Yeah, become more whole.
To integrate the two is two complementary sides. And it's important to try to integrate that. So that we're each as masculine and as feminine as we can be. The great church is not masculine.
You're not saying that you have the same amount of masculinity and femininity as Christy does. That's not what you're saying, right?
No.
Right.
No. But I'm saying that relate sexually with integrate. I think it's trying to come to grips with what it means to be human. And we're trying to take the positive, have you heard the term androgynous?
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And to try to take the positive sides of both and to fully explore those within ourselves as much as possible. It's not a matter of being male or female.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's helpful to, it's helpful for me to separate the two masculine and the feminine characteristics so that I can accept the masculine parts in myself, because there are times when I have not been, have not volunteered to problem solve, when I know how to problem solve, or when I've not been aggressive, when I know that that's the best way, and I've learned that, you know, it's a mistake not to go ahead with that, but yet those aren't feminine, and I felt like I should draw back, and it's helpful for me to understand that there is a part of that in me, you know, that I can go ahead and use that and become one with both. It's helpful for me to accept.
One more comment to run. I think a lot of what our society is saying, using the definitions that have been presented here, or what our society is emphasizing, is sex-related rather than sexuality-related. That every act actually has some genital sex act tied with it somehow. And I don't think that is necessarily true. I mean, for some people, perhaps it is, but. On the whole, example, the quote female or feminine trait of nurturing. If someone needs a hug because they've had a crappy day, or their mother died, or for any reason, that is not a, necessarily a genital act. And our society would have us believe, especially the advertisers would have us believe that everything is related genitally. And so I think that there is a lot of re-education to be done as far as our understanding of how we relate and how the different masculine and feminine, as our society perceives the traits, are related, and how we can integrate them.
I think a lot of this is in the New Testament, though, really. Most all of it, how we really should relate to each other. Jesus pointed this out to us.
Right, but it's not in society.
No, I agree.
So we have to fight society all the way.
And maybe using the terms masculine and feminine, if we did follow the way Christ told us, we wouldn't have to use those words, probably, because we would already be whole. We would already have both of those parts together. We wouldn't need to separate them.
One thing that often happens when you're going to begin an issue or begin a change in society is that it seems like the whole thing is really exaggerated and blown out of proportion, and it feels that way. Like, for example, changing terminology, you know, in scripture reading, it seems like, you know, it's not really like it shouldn't be that blown out of proportion. But see, the problem is that in the beginning it needs to be. All changes, it seems like, have to be kind of like more forceful, it seems. At least that's the way it has been in medicine. And then after there has been some acceptance, you know, then it becomes less, you know, people begin to accept it and they don't think about it anymore. And I kind of think this is the same, you know, that it seems like it's really an exaggeration right now. And maybe you think that it's expanding over everything where it should not be. But
expanding over anything just through the media, and the expansion is in such a way that I don't like it at all.
Mm-hmm.
And so to counter that, yeah, you have to blow it out of proportion and think sometimes.
I think the thing about androgyny, for me, sometimes means that we all become masculine and feminine the same, automatons or something. And that's not what I understand that to mean. I understand that to mean that I may have 30% masculinity and 70% femininity, and Gino may have 40% masculinity and 60%, you know, that we each as individuals have both in a varying way.
The other side of what you have.
Yeah, and to acknowledge that it's part of you. Tom, you want to say
something? We talked a little bit about the Bible, and I'm going to stick this in here in case it doesn't come up again, but when you read Silence, keep that in mind. I'm glad we're doing Silence at the same time the Bible book study, because there's a lot in there about our image of Christ and whether that's a macho one or not, and how Western Christianity perceives Christ as an image. And I think we can get into talking about that next week. So just keep that in mind as you read.
There's just a couple minutes left, and I have a couple points I want to make. My guess is that, I want to ask a question first, is that negative influences, did people have, most, how many people had advertising? Yeah, I would guess Dave had that. There are listening part of it. That was the big one for me. The problem that arises with the whole, back to Witt's idea of spontaneity is we start thinking about, well, anything goes then in the name of love, and you know, we can go out and screw anybody we want to because I love them in the name of God. That's where the whole idea of values and faith and the relationship to our Christian faith comes in, that we are given limitations and concerns about such things as intercourse and abortion and homosexuality. And I'm not saying that's easy. Those are easy. The answers to those are easy. But that's where that comes in.